The future belongs to those who control the culture, and the culture belongs to those who control the conversation. So we are having the conversations you wish you could have at church to build a safe and vibrant community. This is the Oz Table Talk Podcast. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Oz Table Talk. My name is Luke. I'm at the table with Dave, Ore, and Steve. Good evening.
Hello.
Evening.
Evening.
I'm glad you're waving, Ore, so everyone can see you.
So yeah, that's it.
Can hear him wave.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd have to wave real fast.
It's good to have you with us tonight. It's been a while.
I've been so looking forward to this, though.
Yeah.
It's been such a long time, but I'm glad that I'm here.
Yeah,
I've missed this.
That's good. Now, your times have kind of been all over the place, right? Because you've been doing surgery.
Oh, well, kind of.
Yeah, well.
I've been doing a lot of things around surgery, like a lot of, you know, pre-op, post-op.
Well, you've been in the surgical department.
Yeah, basically. It's a lot of work. So, hence, I haven't been able to have a lot of personal free time.
That's one way of putting it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so refreshing where I can come back and, like, I knocked off work. I was like, man, I can actually do stuff now. I can, like, think of going for runs. I can, you know, head to ATT.
Yeah,
it's such a nice
It's
nice
good. Change. I'm glad we're on your priorities list.
You're right behind having a run.
Yeah. Well, that's fairly high on my list. So I take that as a compliment. Oh, good. So what about you, Dave, Steve? How's life been?
Yeah, good. I, strangely enough, just came from the rum distillery.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you bring us anything?
No.
No.
No. It's the weirdest thing going through a tour of, you know, an alcohol facility, like where they go and make the stuff. Yeah. And yeah, not really knowing much about it or... gave you a sample afterwards, and I'm like, no, I'm good, thanks.
I'm driving.
Yeah. But it was with, like, the local engineering group, and I was expecting it to be a bit more of an engineering-based tour where they'd explain the processes and the equipment they use and whatever, but it was just the standard tour, basically.
I'm surprised about that.
Yeah. I mean, there were a couple of engineers that asked engineering-type questions, but apart from that, it was just the normal tour.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was a bit of a letdown, but it was nice. Nice to see everybody. Made a new connection who's just moved up from... Melbourne a few months ago. So that was cool.
Yeah.
Turkish guy. Yeah.
But so. The question is, did you have some of the samples?
No, I did not. I'm happy to report. I am functioning on all cylinders tonight.
What about you, Steve?
Not much. Just working my journal article at the moment.
Yep.
For uni, so chipping away at that and working.
Cool. How close are you to the runway with the article?
I've got just under 2 weeks until the draft is due, and then a month after that until the final. But in between then, I have to do a presentation to my peers and other industry professionals.
Is that why you've gone for this shirt tonight? Is that describing your current attitude?
No, it's just it's the motto of my life.
It says... By the way, for those who can't see it, which is everyone but us.
For those who can't see it.
Danger, grumpy old man.
Yes. It's more of a meme. I wrote it to Gliding the other week because they're all like over 60.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was hilarious.
Yeah. No, that's funny.
That's cool.
How about you?
Me? Very unexciting. So just today is just stuff at home, cooking some curry, which I fed you guys with, and that's pretty much it. Cleaning out a room that has been in desperate need. So,
cool.
It's about that. Studio this week is that much closer, so that's literally just the flooring is waiting. Yeah. So everything's done. So.
Exciting.
See, there was a reason why I was practicing my wave.
That's it. Well, yeah, soon we'll be doing video, so that's right. Then it will be a thing.
Right.
So. Which Dave is so excited about. You're just shaking your head at us, aren't
you? Oh, yeah. This is the weirdest intro ever. But anyway.
Do you listen to the rest of our intros? Like, I bet that's a pretty tall order to say this is the
weirdest
one we've ever done.
No, but I have been here for every one of them. Yeah. Do I have to go and listen back to them? Seriously.
Don't want to relive bad memories.
Honestly, it's actually really funny to listen back to. Like, I derive a lot of comedic pleasure from listening back to us talking. It's rubbish.
Yeah. Okay, Cool.
Anyway, icebreaker for tonight. The question we have is, where do you want to be in 5 years?
There's a lot of things I like to be in 5 years, but certainly I love to be more established in the health ministry space, from a ministry point of view. And also I like to hopefully, you know, advance potentially like a career in surgery as well. Like I think even as much as I'd dislike the hours and the literal sweats, blood and tears that I went through, there's something about it that I found really appealing. Like there's something about when you go through a challenge like that, like it kind of inspires you to reach further and go beyond yourself. And I think that's the kind of thing that's always kind of driven me in my life. I've never liked to settle for things that were easy to do. In fact, I almost will go as far as if it's something is easy to attain, then it's almost sinful to go for that. Because I feel like God expects so much of us, and He has, you know, He's given us, you know, the tools to reach the heights that He wants us to reach. So I really, really want to, yeah, just, I guess that's just like a bit of a something I like to say out to the world, you know, just encourage people to, you know, to reach beyond yourself and not just settle for things that you can go for. Mm. Yeah. Cause I think that's more satisfying in my opinion. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. It's big thoughts. Mm. It is. Mm. There's an off mic conversation that I think I want to have around that. Anyway, what about you, Steve? 5 years.
Oh man, I'm still recoiling from that. That's, like that's like the opposite of my life motto.
you're like
if it's hard, I wasn't supposed to do it.
No, not hard, but like if it's attainable, I'm like I can do this.
Yeah,
yeah. No, that's good. Thanks, Rory.
I get a feeling that was not
that was such a polite statement. Like I'm gonna do the cordial thing right now.
Thank you. Yes, I'm inspired. I honestly have no idea. Obviously, I want to have finished uni because that's a long way away.
Married with 4 kids?
No.
4?
That, yeah, I was saying, the time period is getting really... Yeah, yeah, no, hard pass. I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. We'll see what happens. Go with the flow.
Yeah.
Probably not much will change, but...
House?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Been 5 years.
Setup.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That will have happened.
Living the dream. He's like, yeah, whatever that is. Yeah. I'm a little bit like you, Steve. I'm not really sure. 5 years away could be so many different things. So hesitant to really, you know, narrow that down, but. I mean, obviously, like you, I'd like to be finished uni in 5 years' time. That would be nice.
Yeah.
I won't be experienced enough by 5 years' time to really be much of a use in the engineering space yet. I'll probably need another couple of years after that before I can really be like fully chartered and, you know, ready to branch out a little bit more. So maybe inspiration might be to be working for a company that I feel more aligned with than the one that I currently work for. You know, they're a great training ground and all, but I don't feel like that's fulfilling my desire with regard to humanitarian engineering. It's more of a, you know, sort of traditional, you know, building on what we already have sort of a company. So, I'd like to be much more in the innovation space and thinking about how we can do better by each other and the planet and so forth. So, maybe by then might be working in a space that I feel more aligned with and working towards having some, I don't know, being my own person in that space eventually.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For me, I was reflecting on this before, like my life is probably less volatile is maybe another right word, but like a little less changeable, I guess, than
the garbage flames.
Yeah. more predictable. Maybe that's the way to frame it, more predictable. So, I mean, we've just in the last year, bought our first home. So, you know, we're putting down some roots here. So this is kind of where I'm probably realistically still going to be in 5 years, unless God has some like crazy door that he wants to open for me. But realistically, likely, we'll still be here in Bundy, here in this place. I've been definitely observing a shift in what I'm passionate about professionally. And so will I still have the business that I'm doing now, doing web consulting, you know, building websites for businesses and that? Probably. But I'm thinking it will probably be a significantly lower portion of what I'm doing. So I definitely like the idea. I mean, and really doing this podcast has taught me a bit of this, that I love producing content. And so realistically, I'll probably spend a fair bit more of my time doing that sort of work. What that's going to look like, I'm not quite sure yet, but probably doing more content production and hopefully more collaboration with other people that also do that sort of work. So that sort of stuff I'm passionate about. Aside from that, just hopefully, you know, the kids will be 5 years bigger and I'll be having, you know, more complex and fun adventures with them. And so just hopefully the family's happier and healthier than it is now.
What do you reckon you and a 9-year-old Seth will be doing?
I was thinking about that because, you know, I'm reflecting on the fact that now he's 4, we can do stuff together that we couldn't before, and which I'm really enjoying. And I was thinking, you know, as that grows, I don't know, maybe like that could be anything from, I definitely like to do more camping and like more outdoor kind of stuff. So, because I haven't had much opportunity to do that for a few years now. But yeah, photography. I mean, both the boys, I cannot leave my camera anywhere because they are fascinated by the thing. So every time the camera is anywhere, both, and like I've caught Josiah like running through the house with like $1,000 lens. Like, I'm like, no, please put that down. Please give it to me. And like, I know he's just as likely to turn around and say, sure, Dad, and throw it to me. Yeah. You know? So like, yeah, there's panic involved. But in 5 years from now, that will be a less stressful exercise, I'm sure. But yeah, so definitely like probably engaging them in the creative process. Yeah. I think I'm really keen for that. That's
awesome. Yeah, I can see you guys going out and doing some photography together.
Mm. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Yeah. Do any of you guys think you'll be in Bundy in 5 years' time?
I wouldn't rule it out.
You wouldn't rule it out?
But.
Okay.
Unlikely.
Yeah, me too.
Mm. Yeah.
You might be here on your own, mate.
Yeah, I know. That's actually the only thing that I really, really don't look forward to about 5 years from now.
Yeah.
The fact that most of my friends probably won't be here for that. So, but, you know.
You live most of your life online anyway, though, so.
Yeah, but you don't.
I was going to say, so we'll still be around, but then I was like, hang on, I probably won't. Yeah.
Like,
we'll have to call.
Yeah. I was going to say, realistically, hopeless. To get you guys to, when you move away, if we're going to do like a series that's specifically relevant to you, like you have to come back for a weekend and we'll just like batch it out and do like 8 episodes a day and like get the whole season done.
What a holiday.
Yeah. Right. Of course, it's relaxing, right?
Definitely. Anyway,
we probably should get to our topic, man.
Yes, we should.
Yeah.
It's actually not that bad. It's not as bad as I thought. We've been at this 14 minutes.
It's pretty bad.
Yeah. We could have covered the topic already.
Yeah. I know. We actually haven't even told them what we're up to. Okay, so
Go on then.
The topic for tonight, it comes from another listener suggestion, and it's actually the second one that we've had from Courtney. So Courtney, thank you so much for this suggestion. Courtney is a chaplain, and so she spends a lot of her time figuring out how youth retention works in church. And so the question that she was asking is, why do young people leave the church? And there's so many places that we could take this, but when we were chatting about this earlier, Ore made the observation that it's probably better for us to break this up into a few episodes, so since there is so much to say. So the topic that we're dealing with specifically tonight is why young people leave the church, but looking at it from the perspective of inside the church, what are the issues inside the church that lead young people to leave? And in future episodes, we're going to be looking at then the influences from outside the church and ultimately influences inside the heart. So we'll deal with them in the future. But for tonight, the focus is on inside the church. Just so I can get a little bit of context, have any of you guys either left a church or considered leaving church?
Yeah, I was looking around at us thinking we're so unqualified for this, hey?
You sure?
Yeah, I would say I've not this specific church, but I've left the church before.
Yeah.
I was, that was a period of time, about a couple of years when I finished high school. I decided that church wasn't for me. I thought, you know, I can be a good person and not be in church. Mm-hmm. You know? And there were a variety of reasons that contributed to that conclusion. I would say one of the biggest ones was, I guess, being disappointed by the members in the church and how there were a lot of contradictions and things that kind of didn't sit well with me. And also I was afraid, I would say. I was afraid of the potential restrictions that would place on my, I guess you would say, aspirations or on my dreams. You know, like, you know, when you're, I'm sure this is common knowledge, like young people, they want to change the world. They want to feel like they can contribute to the world in some way or another. Yeah. And when you think of the church, you think of something that is old, historic, outdated, mm-hmm. that is behind the times. And, you know, as a 16, 17 year old, I'm thinking, man, this is, doesn't fit well with what I want to do. You know, I'm about to go to college. Mm-hmm. I'm about to discover more about myself. I don't want anything to impede that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think ironically, that was one of the things that attracted me to the Seventh-day Adventist Church was that it kind of created a culture of that being the opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the fact that the Adventist Church has a history of, you know, people who did change the world, people who did make massive contributions to society and mm-hmm. how they were very forward thinking. That was what kind of was like, wow, okay, you know, church can actually facilitate that. You know, these are my people. Yeah. You know, I'm about to join. So yeah, I guess that's just scratching the surface. But,
yeah.
And we can unpack that a bit more, but just from off the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. This is a topic that would resonate a lot with me.
Mm. Mm. It's interesting. I guess my attendance was sporadic when I was in my teens. So, and that was not me so much as my family's attendance at churches was sporadic. And in my head, that was never directly linked with my spiritual connection with God. So I didn't see my church attendance as being necessarily indicative of my spiritual condition. So whether I went to church or not, I didn't. I guess I was a little bit indifferent, maybe not the word, but you know what I mean? Like I didn't feel that. But my sense of leaving church, I guess the closest I've ever come to that, not that I've ever made the decision or wanted necessarily to leave, but being adequately dissatisfied so it was attractive to leave, probably didn't happen until the last few years. Mm. So, you know, and it's like, depends whether you still want to call someone in their 30s a young person leaving the church. But for me, probably just weight of responsibility just gets too heavy at some point and you just feel like you need to let go of something. And I guess for some people, that's pretty easy for that to be church, you know. So I've seen friends do that, right? Where they used to be really engaged and involved and then things get just, life gets heavy. And so it just becomes easy for them to not. But just to focus in, I guess, around the topic of the issues that are in the church, I think one of the things is a poor leadership culture that we tend to just burn people out over and over and over again. And I think that's very unattractive to especially someone who is young and, like you were saying, all right, wants to change the world. If we burn our leaders out and we burn our members out, you know, over and over again, then who looks at that and says, yep, you know what, I'm going to sign me up for some of that. You know, you definitely, it doesn't feel sustainable. It doesn't feel attractive. So I think that's one aspect of it. Any other things that you spring to mind for you guys?
Yeah, loads. Just going back to your initial question, I've never left the church per se, but certainly was my plan for a long time. And that was probably largely a result of not really seeing Christianity in the church.
That's an indictment, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it might have been for not looking, you know. I'm not willing to say that all of the churches that I went to as a child were terrible. It might have just been that I wasn't seeing it, you know, because sometimes the gospel can be right in front of your nose and you just don't see it. But yeah, I didn't see it. I didn't feel inspired at all by my church growing up. And so I felt like Christianity was a waste of time. So I was going to get out as soon as I was old enough to make my own choices. And then, yeah, I finally saw it, you know, just like a matter of months before I had my P's, and I would have been out then, you know, been making my own choices then as to what I want to do with my life. But yeah, I saw an example of what genuine Christianity looks like. And it was filled with passion and excitement, and like people actually wanted to be there to talk about the Bible, you know, young people, they were like crowding around to hear about what someone had discovered in the Word, you know? And I was like, what is this?
Yeah, you know, that's not normal.
You know? Yeah. Who are you people? And what UFO did you land from? You know, like it just didn't seem right. It didn't seem natural.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that was the thing that I guess shifted my perspective and got me interested in church. So that's probably the one that I would start with, is as you guys were both pointing out, if the church is not an inspiring place, then you know, young people are not going to be drawn to it.
Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how we tend to gather comfort? It's sort of like we, you know, once we're a part of the system, right? Once you become someone who serves in the church, making it inspiring and exciting is hard work, and it shouldn't be, but we tend to think of it as hard work. And so we tend to turn it into something that is boring because, I don't know, we're the one.
We're lazy.
Yeah, we're lazy. Yeah, I didn't want to say that, use that word, but I think.
Yeah, I'll say it for you.
Yeah, thanks. But I do. I think that we become lazy. And so we allow the status quo to just become this baseline, not excited Christianity. And if you go back and you think about the early church, you know, we could turn up Acts chapter 2 and just see where thousands were being added to the church. Every day, it was just going absolutely viral throughout the culture. You wouldn't have thought of Christianity as being a boring status quo religion. It was exciting. If you were a Christian, you were, you know, quite possibly going to die. You know, like, you weren't going to become a Christian because it was the easy path. You were becoming a Christian because you believed it was right, and you believed you were going to go change the world with that information. And I think we've lost some of that. And I think that's one of the reasons that it's not attractive to our young people. But on top of that, it's even less attractive to our young men, because, you know, I think because young men are more motivated by ideology than anybody else. You know, if that's not there, if that passion isn't there, that purpose isn't there, then there's a lot more attractive places they could be expending their energy than in a church.
And on top of that, if we want to focus on that demographic, like when we begin to feminize the church, when we start talking about, you know, things like, oh, you know, let's all, you know, fall in love with Jesus, or like, you know, like just like we tend to use that, like the language around church can, it tends to be very feminine, and I think sometimes that can be a bit off-putting to men who want to just, like, you know, they have this mindset of, let's, you know, get on with the job, very very duty centric, and you know perhaps, you know, we don't necessarily have to emphasize on the, just to use a very crude term, mushy stuff.
Yeah.
Rather, you know, let's, you know, try and cater for those needs as well. Those people who are more inclined to be more practical.
Yeah.
Maybe as a starting point, because I think you need to get to the mushiness eventually. I think that's part of the growth journey as a Christian. But that's a discussion for another episode. Just going back to what you were saying about the church in Acts. The church in Acts was also based upon belonging and mentorship. So you see the things that they were doing together. They were together every day, it says. They were breaking bread and they were in fellowship and they were praying together every day as small groups of people, the early church. So, you know, they had a great sense of belonging. Everyone was part of that, right?
Yeah.
There was no, you know, inner or outer circle with the early church. You were in, or you were just out. You weren't part of it, right? Which I think is very different to the church that we see today. You know, there's cliques in every church that I've ever been to.
Yeah.
And if you're not in one of the in cliques, you feel very isolated and you don't feel like you belong in that space. Mm. Whereas in the early church, belonging was very central to what they did. Mm. And mentorship was also very central to what they did. The leadership processes in the early church, if you go through the book of Acts, everybody had a role to play, and they all knew their roles to play, and they were very much instructed on spiritual gifts and how to use their spiritual gifts for the upbuilding of the church, right? And I think we miss that a lot in the modern church as well. where, you know, we tend to just try and fill roles rather than trying to get the most out of our people to help them to reach their full potential, like you were talking about earlier when you were talking about 5-year plans and stuff like that. You know, we don't do that in a church. We don't say to someone, you know, this is your potential, you know, this is the journey that we want to take you on to reach that potential. Are you in? You know, if that's the way we approached it, how much more exciting would that be as a young person? Right? If you could see that as an opportunity for you to grow, and you were going to be, and there was going to be like a man that you respected or a woman that you respected as a girl who was going to bring you up through the ranks, you know, in the church structure. I mean, that would be so much better.
Oh, man. Yeah.
And rather instead, we tend to see a lot of coddling that occurs with the young people of our church. Like we don't set those high expectations. And some of the worst examples that I've seen, and I won't name churches, but I've literally seen situations where this is an example where there was a particular evangelistic program we were having for the community. We wanted to create kind of like a fun fair for the community. So something that, you know, we can, provide a service. But the issue was, like, when it came to getting the different people involved, like one of the, you know, senior members of the church, even in spite of the young person asking them, oh, what can I do to help? She was like, oh, you know, you can't, like, it was very abrupt, like very, very blunt, very abrupt. You can't do anything. Like, you just, you know, sit over there. I would say that's an extreme example. I'm glad I haven't seen that, but that's the worst it can get. And this was a church that I enjoyed attending. And then when I saw that firsthand, I was shocked that that could even be entertained, that kind of behavior. And I think that's in much more milder forms, you know, that's something that we tend to have this prejudice of low expectations that we have on our young people.
And
obviously what does that do to a young person? They don't see any value in themselves in that framework of church, and they look for value elsewhere.
Yeah, I remember. To be honest, I can't remember who said it, but I remember chatting to somebody once or hearing a sermon. It was one or the other. I can't remember the exact setting, but I remember clearly the guy saying, "What we forget as a church is that we tend to think, well, you know, our senior positions in the church, you know, elders and Sabbath school super and personal ministries leaders, like these people who have, you know, the greatest influence in the church. We have a tendency to look at somebody who is, let's say, in their 20s and go, oh, well, they're still a young person. You know, we shouldn't give them that role. They're not experienced enough. When what you haven't really thought about is that that person is quite possibly a senior something in their company. Like, they're probably leading a team at work. And so they've, you know, if they're, let's say, 27, 28, and they have, you know, gone into a job just out of school, that they're almost like 10 years into a career, and they've probably got a team of 5-6 people under them, and you're saying, I'm sorry, I can't trust you with the key to the church. Like, you know, we're totally forgetting that the people that even founded our church were young people, right? And they were doing that in their early 20s, not in their late 20s. And so we need to have a greater degree, like you say, not coddle our young people, actually trust them and set high expectations and release them into work. Mentor them, because we don't want to set them up for failure, because, you know, you give somebody responsibility and don't lead them well, then they're going to have trouble. But ultimately, if we're just holding them back all the time, they're going to feel like there's what's the point of me being here?
And I just want to give like a shout out to God, to be honest, who actually, like, when you see in the Bible, like, God actually shows a lot of trust in young people. Like, you see, like, so many examples in scripture of people like Samuel. Like, I don't know how old he was when he began his ministry. Insanely young. And God's like already like preparing him for that. And we see, you know, so many examples in scripture where it was always like the youth, where God, you know, really either brought back revivals or, you know, solved a lot of problems through.
Jeremiah had probably one of the most difficult ministries of all of the prophets in the Old Testament, and yeah, he was just a teenager when God called him.
Yeah, Daniel as well.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, lots of good examples of that.
Notice how all the things we've spoken about so far are just culture things.
Yeah.
So what we're saying is that there's not really a problem with the church. There's a problem with the culture of individual churches.
Yeah.
So far. which is really interesting, I think, you know, because that's something you can fix. You can quite easily fix a culture.
Mm. Well, it's actually a lot of really hard work to fix a culture, but I think what you're saying is it's a...
The system itself isn't broken, is what I'm saying.
Yes.
Yeah, which is much... So it's much easier to fix a system that isn't working well than it is to fix a system that's broken completely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and yes, it takes time and effort, for sure. But yeah. It's doable. Mm.
One thing that you said, earlier that I wanted to cycle back to, I just didn't think that we were clear enough or perhaps we explored it far enough, but you were talking about the hypocrisy that young people see in the churches and how unappealing that is. Mm-hmm. That's probably, of all the people that I've spoken to who have left, that would have to rank pretty high on the list of why people have left from internal reasons. Mm. And I think this is exactly why Jesus was so strong against hypocrisy when we read in the New Testament. I think the people who say and don't do what they say are more damaging, because not only do they damage their own walk with God, but because they give the illusion of righteousness, it damages other people's relationship with God as well. Mm. And I think that is one of the things that... I don't even know how I know how to work with that on a personal level. Like, as individuals, we should endeavor to, you know,
look past
that. Look past that. Yeah. I get that. And I'm a big proponent that I believe that the responsibility should be on the individual, not on the community. And of course, the individuals make up the community, but you know what I mean? Like, as an individual, I don't think that it's your job, Dave, or your job, or your job, Steve, to keep me in the church. Mm. It's my job to look past the things that if people are mean to me or whatever, like, that's not Jesus doing that. Mm. And he's the one that is calling me to, you know, be in this relationship to him and operate within the context of community of believers. Mm. He's the one that's asking me to do this. It's not you. And so if you are mean to me, I'm not going to infer that as being a problem of the church globally. Mm. But, and so obviously I am saying that it is the individual's responsibility to draw that line of definition between the organization and the people. But I think that if we can avoid people leaving when they are going through that, hopefully they'll get to the point of maturity where they will be able to do that. But it's just not necessarily, they're just not necessarily at that place when they experience the barbs from others, you know. So I think it is our, in that sense, it is our responsibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One thing I wanted to add was, or I was talking earlier about low expectations. Or like of young people, and I found that was something that I really struggled with and still struggle with our youth group in particular. Like, we've always had like a significant number of people there if everyone shows up, but I've never felt like we've been like deliberately challenged, or like it's just kind of like we show up, we just do the lesson, and we, like, you know, it's just kind of stagnant almost. Yeah. And almost like what we've been taught is just like, it hasn't been pushing us, I guess. Mm-hmm. So like, we haven't been trying to exceed, like, yeah, I don't know how to phrase this properly. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's always frustrated me, because you don't want to be there, because you know that, oh, it's just going to be another lesson or whatever. And I've heard that 100 times before. Like, at least that's something for me. There's
Did really you find coming up through the ranks as well in churches that, until you reach an adult class, and then even sometimes then, that you're not really treated like an adult, or you're not really treated like somebody who has half a brain, you know, like, especially when I was in the kids' divisions, I remember, you know, well-meaning people and all, but they weren't teaching us as though we were capable of learning. They were sort of, you know, I guess coddling, like you were saying before, and just really, I don't know, treating us like kids for far too long, in my opinion. And yeah, I've been part of youth groups in the past where that's been the case, and, you know, like, it's all fun activities and all of this, and that's fine. That's it needs to be a part of what you do with a youth group, I believe. But yeah, once you get past, you know, the real childish years, you want more than that. You want some substance as well as fun.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, that expectation, I think, like you were saying, needs to be lifted. Mm. I think there is also another side to that coin, though, which we haven't mentioned yet, and that is that sometimes, and this is usually based on bad theology, we can actually set the bar too high. Mm-hmm. you know, and that's not usually with expectations on a person reaching their potential. It's usually on expectations on where that, what that person needs to be doing, right and wrong, or
yeah, behavior.
Right. Yeah. And I've seen several people leave the church over that, where they just felt so guilty, you know, as human beings. They felt like they weren't good enough for God or for the church or whatever. And so they left.
Yeah.
Which there's nowhere in the Bible that would make you feel like that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you read the Bible as a whole, at least. I mean, yeah, there are some verses that are pretty hard to understand in that context. But you read the Bible as a whole and you see a God who will go to any measure to have you in. You know, not a God that wants you out at the smallest indiscretion. And so, yeah, I just think that's a really important one as well. As churches, we don't hang unrealistic expectations of perfection above young people's heads, as though if you don't meet this standard, get out. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Just a question for you and Ori, just Dave and Ori. How do you, talking about this expectations, high or low, how do you navigate that? Because you guys teach teens and youth. So how do you navigate that in...
So does Steve.
Oh, you too, at your church, of course.
You're not getting away on this one, mate.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for you collectively, I'm the only one at the table that doesn't teach that. But
oldie.
Yeah. Trust me, I think I'd actually enjoy it more. I think I'm joining your class.
That's why I teach the teens.
How do we do it? Yeah. How do we...
Yeah, how do you manage that? In what ways do you challenge them? Do you raise those expectations to the place where they should be in the right way?
Well, I know I don't do it perfectly and I need to prioritize my teens more than I do. Mm. But for me, because of what I was saying before, how I felt that we were never really...
Challenged.
Yeah, like challenged in to like to think for ourselves and, you know, actually, like, you know, anyway. I've been trying to do that with our teens. So we've been doing the inverse youth lesson, but we went back and we're doing Romans at the moment after doing Covenant. If it's over their heads, we just cover it and move on. But I think it's just beneficial to have those like thoughts at least start to get thrown around, especially in those teen years.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we definitely challenge our kids to move along in their understanding of scripture. I think when Nathaniel and I first started teaching the teen class years ago, one of our main objectives was to teach the kids that it's okay to think for themselves, and in fact that's their duty, to think for themselves and to critically analyze scripture. And so we started out with a policy that any question is okay. There's no such thing as a dumb question in our class, you know. So no matter whether you think you should know the answer or not, you ask the question. And so we taught them very early on, it's okay to ask questions, right? And that built a foundation that now, you know, I would say, wouldn't you, that most of the questions that get asked in Sabbath school are things that I think if they thought long enough about it, they would know the answer to it. But there's a culture has been developed where they don't think anymore, they just ask, you know. And it might sound like a dumb question at first, but they just ask it. And I think that's a good one. That's a good foundation that's been built over a long period of time. And the other thing with regards to the critical thinking is that I've always tried to instill in them the confidence that you don't have to believe what I'm saying, right? I don't want you to just take everything I tell you in Sabbath school as though it was true. And so sometimes I'll even tell them stuff, I'm not sure how I feel about this, but I'm going to teach it to you anyway. Or I'm going to share with you what the lesson says, and I'm going to share with you my perspective, and you weigh it up for yourself, you know? So I'm not just giving them the answers. In some cases, I'm leaving them with the question. And a lot of people would probably see that as risky with people of their ages. You know, we're teaching 13 to 18 year olds at the moment. Some of those kids might be perceived as being a little bit young for thinking on their own, but I don't think so, especially not in a culture where, you know, they feel safe to come and talk if they don't understand something, or they're in a culture where their family members are church people, you know, like I don't feel like that's risky at all, you know. And so I don't understand why more people aren't doing that. So I don't know, there's loads of things that we do, but there's some of them. Do you have anything to add to that from what you've seen?
I would say, for me, it's just
it's, if I could summarize it in a phrase, it's showing them respect that they deserve. Like, it's,
amen.
And one of the ways in doing that is meeting them where they are, where they want to be. I mean, like, it's not fair that they do critical thinking and, you know, at school and things like that, and you expect them to come to church and say, no, you can leave that behind. That, to me, that, yeah. Yeah, I feel like, I feel like that would be, I'll be doing them a disservice, and quite frankly, I'd be offending them. It'd be, I would feel offended if I was in their position. So, and it's just tailoring that to the individual. Mm. You know, I mean, that's what they do in the education system, right? We don't teach everyone the same way to everyone, right? And I think what me and Dave try to do is we try to adjust that, and we do our best to kind of meet them where they are. Mm. And I mean, sometimes, you know, I might miss the mark a bit. I might overshoot or undershoot.
Well, when you start talking about biology.
But like, I want them to feel like, even if in those times I do miss the mark, I want them to recognize that I respected them enough that I wanted them to feel like they could think in those ways, in those terms.
But you do need to extend past the mark sometimes for them to be able to grow to that standard. So I actually think that's good when, and you're not the only one that's guilty of it. I do it all the time as well, where I say something and I'm like, check myself afterwards and think, yeah, that was probably a little bit beyond where these guys are at. Mm. But it doesn't matter that it's beyond where they're at, because we've taught them a structure now in the way that they process things, where that if they don't understand, they ask questions. Yeah. And if they don't know all the answers, they know that's okay, you know? Whereas when I went to church as a young person, I was told if I didn't know the answer to something, that was a threat to my spirituality, right? Mm. And I felt like that was bad. I was in a really bad position if I didn't know the answer to some question.
Mm. So therefore, doubt is evil.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Whereas we teach them having questions is a good thing, and having some questions that are unanswered is also a good thing, because that means you're going to grow into an answer to that later on.
Yeah.
So, but I really love what you said about respecting them. I think, yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's what we need to do with our young people.
Yeah. And you just listed in like that last little section, like two of the things in that article that I showed you guys last week about why people aren't happy with church and end up leaving is because, one, they're, the church is, like you were saying, antagonistic to people who have doubts, and they're just not open to the, like, to having a discussion, and just that attitude.
Yeah, definitely. And especially as a young person, that's so important, because our brains are probably a little bit beyond this stage now, but when people are young, their brains are much more plastic, right? And so they can be molded in any particular direction. And so they want to understand, and they are more susceptible to being, you know, to having questions and to wanting things resolved, right? Whereas when we get a bit older, we think we know the answers even when we don't. Mm. So I think it's a really important stage to let them ask questions and to help them in their journey of asking questions, rather than to be like, no, leave your questions at the door. You know, that's just stupid.
Yeah. I think so. Just reflecting on my own experience, I guess I won't go too deeply into this, because I feel like I'm definitely the odd one out. I feel like my experience has been very different to how 95% of young people have it. But one of the times of the most rapid spiritual growth that I ever had was when I was intentionally challenging myself to listen to thinkers and read books that were way above my pay grade. You know, reading theologians where I was having to check definitions for words they were using like every couple of times every page, because I didn't know what was going on. Wow.
You must have been young at the time. Because you're like a walking encyclopedia now.
But I think that's why I like that kind of thing now, because I pushed myself to understand those things at that point. And I got so much excitement from that, because I would then come away, and when I finally, it would take me a lot of work to understand what I'd read, but then it would be like this light bulb would come on. Like, I get it. I understand what he's saying, you know? And that was definitely the time of most rapid growth for me. Yeah. So I 100% resonate with that.
And it's weird, because we often think that what young people need is the fancy lights and the more excitement, right?
Yeah.
But my experience as a young person, when I did start coming to Christ, like had any investment in the church, the preachers that I was drawn to were preachers that were going deeper and deeper and deeper in the Word, not the ones that preached a really fantastically exciting presentation that got you all emotional. Mm. To me, I wanted people to go deeper in the Word, right? Mm. So, I totally resonate with what you're saying there as well. And I think, you know, that's a bit of a false conception of, as to what young people are actually looking for. Mm-hmm. I think if they can have a sense of belonging in the church, it doesn't really matter whether it's exciting or not, as in the way that we do worship. Mm-hmm. It doesn't really matter whether it's exciting or not. It's more about having them feel a sense of belonging, mm-hmm. and there being a genuine interest, mm-hmm. in what we're talking about, you know, it, mm-hmm. being like, you know, come now, let us reason together. You know,
yep.
God, that's what God wants. That's what the church should want. Mm. And I think young people want that.
And if we can get young people to do that in, like, in community, right? Like, not just one young person that's like the odd one out that's doing it.
Culture, mate.
Yeah, exactly. If you can get to that point of critical mass where it becomes culture and there's multiple people doing it,
yep.
just by virtue of being a part of that group of people,
you'll grow.
Absolutely. Yeah,
definitely. So, and can I say one more challenge that I think we need to address in the church with our young people is we don't teach them to serve, mm-hmm. right? We completely insulate them in the church because we're worried about the outside influences, you know, taking them away from the church. But then what we're developing is a self-centered Christian, which yeah. there's no such thing, right? Yeah. So we're actually setting them up to fail by doing that. So I think we need to incorporate service into what we bring into our for want of a better word, curriculums and extracurricular activities as a church. We need to be teaching them that it's cool to love Jesus, it's cool to want to study your Bible, and it's cool to want to share it yeah. With those around you. And by sharing it, that doesn't need to be through Bible studies or preaching. That can be through like practical ministry, you know. Some of our young people are the best people to be sending out doing, you know, backyard blitzes or whatever you want to call it,
yeah.
you know, where they're just going into someone's home in need and then just, you know, turning up and just doing what needs to be done, you know, because they're physically, you know, capable at that time. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I think that's something that's really underutilized. And yeah, that's also showing them that same respect, or that you're talking about, like where you know, we're not concerned that you're going to walk away from the church just because you're hanging out with somebody who doesn't believe the same as you.
Mm.
You know, we trust them to have an influence on those people in their lives rather than for the people to drag them away. Mm. You know.
I'm tempted to use a medical analogy. I'm holding all the restraint, but I'm going to give in to temptation.
Yeah.
To me, it's analogous to like the hygiene hypothesis. Mm-hmm. Like if you wrap yeah. someone in bubble wrap for a prolonged period of time and you expose them to the world, they're going to get sick.
Oh yeah.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, if you you know, allow them to experience the elements, you know, you allow them to eat dirt, so that, you know, right from the young, you develop their immune system. So that's when they head out to the world, they don't get sick.
Mm.
I think similarly in the church, I think, you know, I've seen some of the worst cases of people who have just completely rejected the church. I come from people who have been over coddled, over sheltered.
Yeah.
And that's such a huge detriment.
And those people that are super sheltered, when they get out of the church context, I think they are far more at risk because which is what you're saying. But I think on top of that, I think they are an even greater liability to other people that are out there that haven't accepted Christ, because they're going to see them and think, man, this person's like completely, you know, tone deaf. Like they have no idea what's going on in the world around them.
Yeah.
You know, why
give Jesus a bad rap?
Yeah. Sorry,
gives Jesus a bad rap.
Yeah, exactly. Because if that's the example that's being set, then that's not a good one.
That's why I didn't want to be a Christian.
Yeah.
Yeah. In the church, I didn't want to be a Christian because that's what I saw.
Yeah.
I'm like, I don't want to be like these people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So feel free to throw stuff in if I'm missing it, but just so we're like
summary.
Yeah, getting towards a summary here. So we're saying give them like freedom to question and get them to ask good questions. Respect them enough to, you know, expect them to be critical thinkers, mm-hmm. and enable them to do that. Have appropriate expectations. Don't coddle them. Allow them to have responsibility and to grow into it. We're saying that we need good community. We need good mentors in that community. And we're also saying that they need inspiration. So if you are a person who is not a youth and you are the older person who is setting the culture of the church, you can't afford to be lazy. You need to be an inspirational leader. You need to be calling them to something that's greater and giving them... So releasing them to do that.
Yes, and setting an example in that as well.
Yeah, and setting an example, true, because then that avoids the hypocrisy trap.
Yeah. It sounds a lot like good coaching, doesn't it?
You know?
Think of it like a sports club, you know? Yeah. You're not going to join the club if you don't feel any of those things.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's try and do that, I guess.
Yeah.
And do you guys have any final words? We're happy.
No, sounds good to me.
Right. So we are going to leave that there, and we will be back next week with the next installment of this series of Exodus 2.0, Why Young People Leave the Church. And I hope you guys will be there with us for it. If you have enjoyed this episode, stop right now. Don't do anything else. Even if you're driving, pull over and text it to a friend. So.
Speaking of unrealistic expectations.
They know what I mean. They know what I mean. So we'll leave that there. We'll catch you guys next week. Thanks for joining us. Bye. And that's the end of another episode. Just before I head off, I want to encourage you to go over to our page on Facebook and also our account on Instagram and follow us there, because that is where we interact with our listeners, and we would love for you to enter in and join the conversation. Also, while you're signing up, I would also recommend signing up to our mailing list on our website, oztabletalk.com.au. If you do that, you will receive our exclusive content, because occasionally we do release exclusives and they only go out to our mailing list. So I would strongly recommend you go and sign up for that. If you have a few more minutes to be one of the most amazing listeners on the planet, you can go over to iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review, because reviews help us to grow and they help other people to find us. So if you want to help us reach those goals, please jump in and give us a review. The final message that I'd like to leave you with is to let you know about our Patreon account. Now, Patreon is a way for creators to get paid for creating, and ultimately what we do does cost money to get us hosted and have the services that we need to run the podcast. And so if you'd like to help us do that, jump over onto patreon.com/oztabletalk, and you can give anything from even a dollar a month upwards, but at different levels there are different benefits, different rewards that we want to give you, just to say thank you for being an amazing supporter of ours. If you can't afford that, we would just gratefully accept your prayers, because that is what our ministry runs on. And so with that, I will leave you to your day, and thank you so much for listening to this episode. We look forward to seeing you guys next week.